WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. Jim Lehrer doesn't reveal much about himself on the McNeil Lehrer NewsHour, but in his so-called free time, he's been writing memoirs and novels. He has a new memoir called A Bus of My Own. It covers his career in public television and at a Dallas newspaper. And he writes about buses. He loves them. He collects bus memorabilia. His brother says if you cut him, you'd find diesel fuel instead of blood. Buses used to be the family business. In 1946, Lehrer's father started a small intercity bus line in Kansas with a total of 3 buses. The business went bankrupt in a year. Lehrer says the failure always stuck with his father, and Jim Lehrer thinks that might explain his own recurring nightmare of being fired. He dreams about being fired, even though he and Robert McNeil are now the heads of their own production company.
Yeah, the gods of the dreams haven't figured that out. I mean, I want to yell in back and say, "Hey, McNeil can't fire me." You know, I mean, we're partners. But in the dream, it's never clear how the word came to me. The dream begins where I'm sitting at an upright typewriter on the obit desk of the Dallas Morning News, and I'm old like I am right now. And all these young kids are standing around watching me. Oh, Lehrer, McNeil Lehrer, poor guy got fired, but he's back here and he can still write obits. It's a terrible dream, I'll tell you.
When was the last time you had it?
Oh, I have it a couple times a year. I can't remember the lot, but it's been within the last several months. It's usually, you know, there's no connection with, sometimes there's no connection between anything that even resembles anything firing. I mean, it's not that. I guess it just happens when I get down or something like that about things generally.
Right. You and McNeil have both been writing novels and memoirs in the past few years. How are we to interpret that? Where have you found the time to do it? What did you take the time from?
Well, I found that, and I think he has too, that there are certain things in life you want to do very badly, and if you want to do something badly enough, you can find time to do them. But In order to do that, you've got to quit doing the things you don't want to do.
So what'd you give up?
Well, I gave up making speeches. I gave up...
You mean on the road?
On the road. I gave up going to lunch.
Every day, or you mean special
just
lunches?
Just about. I never go to lunch. Mm-hmm. I mean, I won't say never. In 9 years, I've gone out on a work day to lunch maybe 5 times. And I take a nap every afternoon, which gives me more energy. Kind of breaks my day into 2 days. And so that in the end of the day, when I go home after having done the news hour, I'm not that exhausted. I still have energy left, both psychic and physical. And fortunately, in my case, my wife Kate is also a writer. She understands the needs, and as I understand hers, and so it all works. And the other thing too, you got to remember, Terry, is that Robin and I now have each in our own way been in daily journalism for over 30 years. Mm-hmm. Now, daily journalism, whatever else it is the greatest concentrator. Greatest training ground for concentration there is. You go from one subject very intensely to another subject very intensely.
And it doesn't end.
And it never ends. Exactly right. And you can't spend a lot of time, you can't waste a lot of time worrying if the wind is right, how do you feel? You know, I have said I could write underwater at 5 in the morning, hungover, hanging by my thumbs. And McNeil is exactly the same way. He grew up in a wire service, the Reuters News Service. I grew up on an afternoon newspaper. And they don't hold deadlines for you and, in daily journal. They don't say, hey, we're not quite ready, let's hold the newspaper. Hey, we're not quite ready to go on the air, let's hold the broadcast. And it's part of us. And so it helps us when it comes time now we want to write fiction. You know, we just go from one to the other, boom, there's no big deal about it.
You know the old cliche that no one on their deathbed ever said, I wish I'd spent more time in the office? That's always interpreted to mean that all you really think about when you think about the end of your life is relationships. And somehow I don't really think that's true. I think people really look back on their life and say, I wish I had done this, or I wish I had had a chance to develop this talent, or to write that book or whatever. You had a heart attack a few years ago. You were really afraid for your life. You had bypass surgery. When you look back on your life, were there things you wanted to do? You know, not spending more time in the office, but things you wanted to do that you decided to make time for, like maybe writing books.
Exactly. Exactly right, Terry. You got your you put your finger on it. That's exactly what happened to me. It isn't this thing of, oh my, looking back on my life. I looked ahead and how much time I had left, whether it was 5 days, 5 months, 5 years, 25 years, I wanted to do these things. And in order to do them, I had to make some adjustments in my life. And that meant getting rid of the other things that I was doing and just to accommodate them. And and I've done it, and I'm very fortunate to be able to have done them.
You tell a pretty frightening story in your book how when you were getting wheeled into the operating room for your bypass surgery, the anesthesia hadn't taken full effect when the surgery was beginning, and yet you didn't have enough strength to, like, talk or scream or you know, intervene in any way. What a nightmare.
It was a nightmare. And as I say in the book, I had it, you know, for a long time afterward. Fortunately, that's not one night. I still have the firing nightmare about writing obits in the Dallas News, but I don't have that one anymore. But that was a petrifying experience, and I never went back and tried to figure out what it was because I didn't want to know. You know, everything turned out all right. By then, it didn't matter. But I saw those lights and everything, and I heard these people talking, and I thought, and they're about ready to start operating on me, and I wanted to say, hey, wait a minute. Hey, don't do that. Wait a minute. I'm not out yet. And I couldn't talk. So, but anyhow, it all turned out all right.
Is it possible that was a dream?
Oh, Terry, I hadn't thought about that. You mean that it really didn't happen?
Mm-hmm.
I hadn't thought of you. You may be right. I might have been way out.
I think one of the reasons why I asked that is a recurring dream I've had all my life is that, you know, I'm kidnapped or, you know, someone's attacking me or whatever, and I can't scream. I can't move and I can't scream. And it just sounds so similar to what you experienced.
You may be absolutely right. I hadn't even considered that. It was so real to me that I just assumed that it happened. But obviously, I had been, I'd been drugged in some way. I mean, I had the anesthetic in me. I mean, it could very easily be only a dream.
Jim Lehrer is my guest. He's written a new memoir called A Bus of My Own. We're going to take a short break and then talk some more. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Jim Lehrer, co-anchor of the McNeil Lehrer News Hour. I want to get back to your early days in journalism when you started out in Dallas. First, I guess, writing obits like your nightmare.
Right.
And then eventually getting to be the city editor. You say that you started your career in journalism because Hemingway used to say, if you want to write, start by writing for newspapers. Start with journalism, but only do it a couple of years. How seriously did you take that? Did you really think of that as just like the preliminary, the first step onto the career as the great American novelist?
Oh, sure. I did. I really did. I thought, though, that I might be able to do both. I wasn't sure. But, yes, it was with me all the time from the very beginning of my desire to be a newspaper man. The desire to be a writer of fiction was there, too.
Now, you say when you were writing on this paper in Dallas, I guess it's when you were the city editor, that you realized what all newsrooms need are a few firings. Firing people for sloppiness, firing people for not caring. It's really hard to fire someone. How often have you really followed through on that in your career?
I have fired a few people for that kind of thing, not very many. Fortunately, it doesn't happen very often. But I am not pleasant to be around when somebody has been sloppy. To this day, if one of our reporters gives me some information about one of our guests, and I say this is Billy Bob Boom Boom, who is a left-wing lobbyist for whatever, and I introduce him that way, and then he says, actually, I'm a right-wing lobbyist for whatever. Boy, when that, and I say, well, I'm sorry, and I go on my interview. But when I come out of that studio, I'm one of the things I've said to our people, and I say it every time it's necessary, every word that comes from our mouths as prepared copy had better be right. We have no control over what the guests are going to say, but we do have control over our own thing. And there, I just go crazy when somebody, usually somebody new on the staff, and I'll say, well, now, what is the, is it the Brookings Institute or is it the Brookings Institution? And they say, oh, it's one or the other. No, it isn't, friend. It's only one. And then, I mean, get a name wrong. I mean, it's just those kinds of things. And that's the kind of thing, if you don't learn that early. See, that's why I've always believed, well, I sound like an old fogey here, but I am an old fogey, so I can sound like that if I want to. It's, you know, that's why print experience is so good. And if you're in the real world of print and you're sloppy, somebody's going to come down on you. And you're going to learn the hard way that the middle initial of some guy who died in South Dallas is just as important as getting a quote right from the President of the United States. And if you don't understand that, then you ought to go in another line of work. And the people who edit these damn newspapers and magazines and produce television programs ought to enforce that on people. They're the people who've got to teach that to the journalists of this world. And if they don't, I mean, if you get it right, it's what it's all about. And
so, is it one strike and you're out?
Oh no! I'm not that fanatic about it. But their sloppiness is people look. The reason you have to work so hard to get it right, because no matter how hard you work, you're still not going to get it right all the time. Because
yeah.
We're not in the history business. You're still, you know, you're going to have to go with an incomplete story here and there. Things are going to fall through the cracks. And that's going to happen, but never because of sloppiness. And sloppiness you see in people and you can get rid of them. It's not just one, you know, one thing that goes wrong, you fire somebody. I don't mean that.
You know, I was once engineering a show at the first station that I worked at. It was the evening news show, and I was engineering it, and I made some stupid mistake. I think I, like, absolutely accidentally turned somebody's mic off or played a record when it was supposed to be a clip of somebody giving an interview. I did something dumb. And the host of the show, when he got back on mic, said, I want to explain to the audience, I am not the engineer. I am not responsible for that error. I thought that was so cheap. But don't you sometimes have the urge to say that when someone's
sure.
giving you, like, the wrong information and you've kind of
sure.
made a fool of yourself on TV?
Yeah. And exactly right. And in fact, that's what I say to them. I've said this many, many times. Somebody, you know, I'm coming out steaming, and they say, oh, I'm really sorry. I mean, but gosh, you know, those kinds of things are going to happen and all of that. And I'm really, you know. And then I say, yeah, and I am the person who had egg on his face and made a fool of himself on national television. And I don't like to do that. And I, yeah, you're exactly right. Oh, sure, I've been tempted to do that.
Now, here's the thing. You've had a heart attack, and you probably shouldn't get yourself really worked up, really aggravated about something. But it's so upsetting when you make an error on the air. So how do you handle that now?
Well, the best thing about my job is that it is daily. And when I do something dumb, what I try to do, I have a 15-minute drive from our offices, our studio, to my house in Washington. It takes 15 minutes, and I beat up on myself for 15 minutes. And then when I get into the house, I vow that I will not think about it anymore. And the great thing about it is I have to start thinking in the office the next day about what we're going to do that night. So the situation, I feel so sorry for people who do weekly or monthly programs who have a whole week to worry about the stupid things they did, and because the dailiness thing helps. And I've kind of gotten where I can mostly get it out of my head. But if they're really grievous, they stick around for a little longer.
In your early days as a journalist, you interviewed Elvis Presley and Steve Lawrence. What was Steve Lawrence really like? Just kidding.
Thank you, Terry.
If listeners could look at you and say, I think I know who he's voting for in the election, would that bother you?
Oh, it sure would. Ooh, I would feel like I am not doing my job.
Because you think your job is...
Well, my job is to sit there and help the viewers pick through it all. And if they thought I was helping them pick through it with some end result in mind, if I was them, I wouldn't watch me. I would watch me with a different eye, a different ear, and I hope that they would never do that.
Okay. I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Terry, it's always a pleasure. Good luck to you.
One last question. What are you going to be doing election night?
Well, we're still talking about it. We're definitely going to be on the air. How long and when we're going to come on and all of that is still a matter of discussion. But we're going to probably do some stuff that probably television has not done before.
What's your dream show election? When you watch other stations, what do you wish you were doing? If you had any amount of money and you could really draw it up?
Well, I would. It's a very simple dream. It would be to have the resources that the commercial networks have, which is to have all the polling data come in immediately, have access to all of the candidates and all of their headquarters and all of that, and then do McNeil Lehrer the rest of the time. Have people on who have something to say, people who have can tell us why certain things happen in the election. It would be a simple dream.
Okay.
It'd be a long dream, but a simple dream.
Okay, thank you again.
Thank you, Terry.
And I wish you very good health.
Thank you.
Jim Lehrer's new memoir is A Bus of My Own. He co-anchors the McNeil Lehrer NewsHour on public television. This is Fresh Air.